Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. This time, we'll be previewing the Southeast Division. Joining me today, as always, are Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, guys?
Doing all right. Been a little sick, so I'm going to try not to sniffle. But if we have to mute my whole end of the podcast, it probably wouldn't be the worst thing that ever happened.
So. I'm right there with you, Sarah, and so is my son. We have been sniffling for 2 days now.
Oh, good. All right. So this is the viral edition of the NBA podcast. My wife is also sick, so this is just great. I'm going to keep my immune system in check so I can hopefully keep things rolling along here. So we've tackled the Atlantic and the Central. We are now turning our attention to the Southeast Division, where a lot of teams went through some significant overhaul, which we will be touching upon in the coming hour. We're going to start with the Atlanta Hawks. They obviously went through the biggest overhaul, losing Al Horford and trading Jeff Teague. They brought in Dwight Howard and drafted a couple forwards in DeAndre Bembry and Taurean Prince. Also re-signed Kent Bazemore. So, Sarah, I'm going to start with you, given your infatuation with big men. How do you think they adapt to the loss of Al Horford? And how does Dwight fit in there?
What's funny is, like, my infatuation with big men is kind of overruled by my not really caring much for Dwight Howard.
So, oh, no.
And it's no reason, really. I just don't. He's going to have a good year. You guys have both been saying how this could be a really good spot for him, that he wasn't really as bad as it seems like he was last year. What I'm most interested in is to see, they're kind of in sink or swim mode with Dennis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just going to ride that out. It's going to be an interesting year. I don't know that he's 100% ready for that, but they do have Jarrett Jack. Is he stuck? Is he going to stay? I don't know how that's going to play out. He's on the roster.
I haven't heard it
right now.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either way.
Okay, well, they got him. They have Tim Hardaway Jr., but that's another young guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be the most interesting thing, in my opinion. You know, it's still got Millsap. Dwight's, I think you guys are right. Dwight's going to have a good year. It's really just, in my opinion, going to depend on how well Dennis plays that starting point guard spot.
Yeah, totally agree. What about you, Morten? How do you see this all playing out?
Well, the point about Jarrett Jack, he's becoming a little bit necessary because Dennis Schroeder is still young, and you need to throw a veteran in there who knows how to lead an offense and play the pick and roll with Dwight. Speaking of, was it 91 or 92 pick and roll positions Dwight was involved in last year? It was virtually nothing.
91, and I believe.
91, that is ridiculously low,
and
I expect that number to climb.
Yes.
Like, having said that, Dwight has always had this problem that he sees himself as a back-to-the-basket big man. He is not. He is very best setting the pick and then just going straight down the middle. And if anyone can reach him, I think it's Mike Budenholzer. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I'm very optimistic about Dwight. Not that he'll return to, like, Orlando Magic Dwight, but he could be a 17-point guy, 12 rebounds, 2.5 blocks, 60% from the field, and then the continuous free-throw problem. But, you know, who expected otherwise?
Right. Haven't you seen those videos? He's shooting them at, like, 70% clip now. Maybe the move back home will do him good in that regard.
Well, he shot 82% in Lakers practice.
Oh, yeah. Okay, never mind. He's still going to shoot, like, terribly from the free throw line. So that is not going to change. I'm with you guys. I mean, I've been pretty bullish on Dwight to the Hawks for a while now. Morten, you touched on it. The Rockets really just did not utilize Dwight in the way that he should be. And then I think it was Ramona Shelburne who had that story of ESPN toward the end of the playoffs, where it was like, Dwight even approached Daryl Morey at one point and was like, hey, I want to be used more in this offense. And Daryl Morey said no. So that didn't exactly bode well for his time in Houston, and you can't really blame him for moving on there. Sarah, I think you nailed it. Dennis Schroeder is really going to be the key to how good Dwight is. I think he's a natural pick-and-roll point guard, so that will work well. The question is, can he shoot well enough to command the respect of defenses? You know, you still have Kyle Korver there, so you've got at least one guy who you can't leave open from the three-point arc. But Kent Bazemore is kind of a streaky shooter. Paul Millsap, that's become more of his game in recent years. But, you know, Al Horford actually kind of unveiled a three-point shot last year for the first time. And Dwight Howard, that is not part of his game. So the spacing, I'm very interested to see, because I think it's a pretty clear downgrade in that regard. Do you guys think they are due for some regression compared to the past 2 years?
I would say a little bit, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Sarah, you're allowed to expand on that.
That's okay. No, yeah, I mean, I have the utmost faith in Coach Bud, but yeah, I just think it's pretty clear the roster is not quite where it was the last few years. And beyond that, we all saw how they unfortunately performed in the playoffs regardless. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they'll take a small step back. Lucky for them. Although, actually, it's not really that lucky. I was going to say they play in a pretty sad division, but divisions don't really matter anymore, so never mind.
Right, there is that. Morton, you're on the same boat. You think they're going to take a step back this year?
Yeah, like their second best player, arguably, right now is Dwight Howard, depending on the evolution of Dennis Schroeder. Mm-hmm. And you can't necessarily have him in at the end of games like you could Horford.
Right.
That's a huge blow.
Yeah,
that's a huge blow. Horford could, I mean, he could hit three throws, but outside of that, he could hit threes. He could stretch. He provided spacing. Dwight, if he's not within 8 feet, he's not doing any damage. So, yeah. I just look at Mike Budenholzer's team right now with less flexibility coming into this year as opposed to last. Mm-hmm. Adding to that is Kyle Korver, who has... He's nearing his NBA death. So to speak.
Sure.
I mean, he's old, man, and he is not quick anymore. We saw him regress last year. I don't think adding a year to it is going to help anything. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of leaving it up to Kent Bazemore to suddenly blow up, right?
Right. And he did last year, to be fair, but you're definitely expecting him to take even another step forward. And he's got these two young rookies to hold off for playing time. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out. I'm with you guys. I think, you know, the days of the 60-win Hawks are a thing of the past. I think that was just a flash in the pan and a confluence of events working in their favor. You know, I do think Dwight has a good year. I'm pretty optimistic about Schroeder, but I forget who said, I think both of you said Jarrett Jack is a good insurance policy, and I agree with that. I think we're going to touch on this theme a lot throughout this preview. The Hawks are lucky in the sense that they play in a division that's pretty battered. I mean, there's not really a clear front runner, and there's not a team that is a clear-cut playoff team out of the whole division, really. So, you know, they might pick up a couple wins just because they're in the Southeast versus, you know, a team in the Central who has to compete with Cleveland and Indiana and Detroit every night. So we'll see what happens with Atlanta. Let's move on to the Charlotte Hornets. They made their big re-signing of Nick Batum, which they absolutely had to do after trading for him last year. So that was a big win. They did lose some bench depth, though. They lost Jeremy Lin to Brooklyn, Courtney Lee to the Knicks, and then Al Jefferson to the Pacers. And in their place, they signed Ramon Sessions, traded for Marco Bellinelli, and signed Roy Hibbert. hey, no.
On paper, it doesn't really sound all that good, does it?
Like no.
Gave up a first-round draft pick for Marco Bellinelli and then signed Roy Hibbert. Like, those two alone, when you just get them listed up like you just did, sounds pretty depressing.
It's not ideal, but they do have MKG coming back, so that is a big plus. I'm going to save my Roy Hibbert caping a little bit. So, Morton, let's start with you on MKG. How do you think he fits in with this roster now that he's, knock on wood, back and healthy?
Here's the thing. He can handle the basketball. I like that with him. He can't shoot, but he can handle the ball. He's sort of like the small forward version of Rajon Rondo, just saying. And that's a pretty interesting dynamic to throw in there, because that means that he can create a little bit off the bounce and create from others. He can collapse defenses, because around the rim, you wouldn't want like this 6'8 athletic wing to just come crashing into you. He can finish around the basket. Mm-hmm. But of course, the lack of shooting kind of makes him a pseudo Al Jefferson, doesn't it? Like, I viewed the losing of Al Jefferson as an addition by subtraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Dane in the house, right? All right, look. But yeah, so I'm kind of fearing that Kid Gilchrist is becoming the pseudo Al Jefferson, because he is going to have to score around the rim and not off the bounce. But having said that, he can initiate something.
Yeah.
And that's a tremendous positive. And he's like 12,000 times the defender the Big Al is. So that adds some dynamic to it. But really, it's all about the development of Kemba Walker. Again, mm-hmm. he took a huge step up last year. The question is now, can he maintain that production? Can he maintain that aggressiveness? Can he maintain this all-star level of play? If he can, okay, I think they're pretty good, and I think they will easily return to the playoffs. If he goes back to being the Kimber that we knew before, well, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. Sarah, what do you think Kemba has in store for an encore this year? And same goes for Nick Batum.
I mean, I think Kemba's going to be good, but I went into this looking at the Hornets thinking I'm not as high on them as I would have been had they kept Lin, and I'm probably mm-hmm. just too big of a Jeremy Lin fan.
Yep.
But as I was looking at the roster, like, I just don't see a lot of scoring on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at, they averaged only 90 points per game last year, and they lost something like 33 points per game. And, like, specifically, if you look at Al Jefferson, I think averaged about 13 last year. I know his defense was a problem, and so you're adding Roy Hibbert's rim protection, but, you know, you're replacing Al's 13 points per game with about 6 points per game. Mm-hmm. So I just really think that's going to be a big problem for this year, for them this year, that you can't score. I don't know how you're going to keep up. I don't care how good your defense is. Obviously, they're adding MKG and Hibbert, but that's really going to be a struggle. Batum is a great guy to have on your roster in that he could do a little bit of everything, but he's not often going to give you a lot of points. You know, he right. just kind of plugs in there. But so that for me is their biggest problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, in theory, Marco Bellinelli, Jeremy Lamb, and Ramon Sessions will be those kind of microwave scorers off the bench. Mm-hmm. But when you look at their front court depth, I mean, behind Marvin Williams, it's Frank Kaminsky and Christian Wood. And then center, you mentioned Hibbert. They've also got Spencer Hawes, but even Cody Zeller is not a big-time scorer. So a lot of the scoring load is going to fall on Walker, Batum, and Marvin Williams, it seems like.
Yep.
Morton, you did mention MKG's able to handle the ball, and I think that's what, in my opinion, that's what made Kemba break out last year, is that he had Batum there who can also handle the ball. So it mm-hmm. wasn't like all of the ball handling responsibilities weren't falling on him, and he was more free to work off the ball. He's like, he's lethal as a cutter. So the fact yeah. that you have guys, I mean, I think this is probably the next big trend in the NBA is to, you know, we've got positionless basketball, we've got small ball now. I think the next big trend is going to be having multiple guys who can run your offense. So you don't necessarily need a star point guard like Chris Paul, who is running every possession. So I think having Batum and having MKG in there is really going to help Kemba, and it would not surprise me to see him take another step forward this year.
So you're saying that one of the new things the NBA has to offer is something they did a lot of in the 90s?
Yeah, they're going right back to it, yeah.
No, I agree. It's just when you look back at the 90s, you had a lot of wings who could handle the ball, like Scotty and Grant Hill. When Penny was switched to the two, he was the playmaker, and even Nick Anderson, when Penny was at the one, he could play on the ball a lot. So you had a lot of these double playmakers. But I agree that it's becoming a larger necessity now that defensive rules have changed, and everything is about spacing and cutting and shooting and all these things. So yeah, you could make Kemba your target, like your constant target, which means theoretically he could have like a 25 point season.
Yeah,
that would be interesting, and it might even be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
having said that, I still do expect Frank Kaminsky to establish himself a little bit more in his next season.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to when you turn down six picks
right.
for that position. God, I just look. Michael Jordan is God to me, but turning down that trade, all right. That's just me.
And heck, even picking him over Justice Winslow. I mean,
I wasn't going to crab on the legend, so
yeah.
But just pile on, Brian. I'm not going to be the one.
I get it. Hornets fans get very defensive when the Kaminsky thing gets brought up, so I think you're right in the sense that he does need to have a big year to quiet the critics of that supposed. I mean, you know, we don't know the details of that trade. Like, it's been reported that it was six picks and four first-round picks. We don't know exactly what happened. We do know that Justice Winslow was on the board, and they passed him up for Kaminsky. So,
and we know Danny Ainge was afterwards like, oh, probably a good thing we didn't do it.
Yeah.
He was really backtracking on that. I was like, oh, some things happen for a reason, and that's probably a good thing.
We touched on Danny Ainge. You know I don't believe a word that comes out of that man's mouth.
So just a question to you guys, Jeremy Lamb, what do you see from Jeremy Lamb this year? I think it's make or break time.
Sarah, what do you think?
I would agree with that. But I hope he steps it up because, first of all, I think he is capable. I'm not sure what's holding him back. He's going to get opportunities this year, so he's got to capitalize. But, I mean, you guys brought it up about Brian, you said that he and Ramon and Bellinelli are the guys who are supposed to come in and help make up for that kind of scoring that they're going to need. At least one of those guys has to, because they're going to be hurting for points. So that's the opportunity is there. He's got to avail himself of it.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think he wasn't bad last year. I mean, he's been inconsistent, which has been the problem that's plagued him back to his OKC days. And I don't know that changes, but I mean, like, look at, I don't want to compare him to this guy, but look at Nick Young. Like, he's made an NBA career out of being quite possibly the streakiest shooter in the league. You know, he can blow up for a 25-point game, or he can turn around and start running down the court mid-shot. And it's not like Steph Curry, where he knows it's going in.
No, and to be fair, Lamb did have a good year last year. I mean, when you look at it, he played limited minutes, under 19 a game, averaged almost 9 points and almost 4 rebounds. When you turn that up to per 36, he's a 17 and 7.4 guy. That's a positive, but it was the streakiness. It was the lacking jump shot. It was the fact that he had such an obvious level of talent that he seems to not be utilizing. Look, he's long. He's sneaky athletic. He's got a quick first step. And when you look at the way he shoots the basketball, there is nothing to suggest he could not become like a 42 or 43% three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. Yet, it hasn't happened yet. I'm still waiting for that one year where he just says, screw it, I'm here, I'm on the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, and it sounds overly emotional, I get that, but the talent level is just so obvious. It's so obvious that I'm expecting more.
I can see that. And I think, you know, we talked about it earlier. I think having multiple ball handlers will help him in that regard, just because you can't really, you don't know where the offense is going to be coming from. So I think, knock on wood, that should open some opportunities from him. And they also just really badly need some three-point shooters, especially after losing Lin and Lee. Those were two of their best three-point shooters. So I think you said it best, Mort. It's a make or break year for Lamb.
Marco Bellinelli.
Yeah.
For the 3-point shot, because when you give up a first round draft pick for him, you better make sure you use him.
To be fair, the Kings then used that pick on Malachi Richardson, who is from Syracuse, so you know he's going to be out of the league in 3 years anyway.
Hate. Absolute shade.
Too soon?
Your mentions is going to be flooded.
Speaking of Syracuse, let me allow my Georgetown alum person status to cape for Roy Hibbert for a second. I mean, we saw him. He was awful with the Lakers last year. Let's not cover it up. He was terrible. But look who was the coach. I mean, Byron Scott basically tried everything he could to murder D'Angelo Russell's basketball career before it ever got off the ground. And I think we're going to see this year that Russell is a far better player than he showed last year. And I think the same is going to be true for Hibbert in Charlotte. I think Clifford is a great, even-keeled coach. I don't think he's going to jerk his players around and not have a system in place or just not, you know, he's defensive-minded. So I think that's going to play to Hibbert's strengths. And also Patrick Ewing, another fellow Hoya, is on the staff there. And Hibbert has worked with, I mean, Hibbert played with Ewing's son at Georgetown. You know, a lot of the old Georgetown big men come back every summer and work with the current guys. So I would pretty surely say Hibbert and Ewing have worked together in the past before. So I feel like if anyone is going to get him back to that all-star level he was in Indiana, it's going to be Ewing and it's going to be Clifford. So I'm pretty excited to see if they can revive his career, because it's been quite a sharp drop over the past few years.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about going the coach route on your argument, Bri, because he played for Frank Vogel.
Yeah, that's true.
And he started really having problems.
Yeah, that was, what, the end of... How long was he there when he... Was he just there for a year when he really started to nosedive, or was he there for two? He was there for two.
Two, apparently. I don't know. Yeah, I think so. I hadn't really looked that up, but he just became so passive, and even defensively, he didn't step up as he used to. He started gambling, and the verticality thing, you know, he sort of stepped away from that a little bit. It was weird. So, I don't know. Roy has had an, let's just say, interesting NBA career so far.
Yeah.
And for the sake of the league and for the sake of Roy, I obviously hope to see him return to the defensive player of the year caliber-ish player that he once was. I don't think he ever won the award, but he was like top three a couple times, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was up there. I don't remember exactly where he was.
He was a candidate, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure.
So if he can return to that, sure, that'd be great, but I'm thinking that he needs not just to change the scenery to Charlotte, but he needs to change his game up. Just don't focus on scoring anymore.
Yeah.
Just focus on rebounding, and he was never a good rebounder to boot, so if he could put some extra effort on that, that'd be nice. Just block shots, rotate, rebound, and he's a good passer. So just get the ball, get it to a guard or Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and then get the hell out of the way, Roy.
Yeah.
That would really be the way to go forward from there, because you can't have a low efficiency center taking a bunch of shots a game. You just can't.
Yeah. I mean, so to your point, he's never shot above 49.7% from the field, and he took at least 9 shots a game every season from 2009, 2010 through the end of his time in Indiana, 2014-15. So
yeah, his career true shooting percentage is 51.
Yeah, that's not great.
No, it really isn't. And he survives a lot on his free throw shooting.
Yeah, which is good for a big man.
He is
not Dwight Howard in that regard. I think, if anything, you can look at Bismack Biyombo during his time in Toronto, more so than Charlotte, as kind of the hope for what Hibbert can become.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
I mean, I don't think he's going to supplant Cody Zeller as the starting center by any means, but I think he's going to give Charlotte 15, 20 good minutes off the bench as a defense-first guy. Because I have zero faith in Spencer Hawes as much more than... I think Hibbert's going to pass Spencer Hawes pretty early in the year.
I'm glad you brought that up because Cody Seller is their starting center or projected starting center.
Right.
I am not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, I'm. Well, I mean, this is his fourth year, so
yeah.
I feel like they're gonna trot him out there, kind of as his make or break year to see if he can cape. I mean, they spent the number four pick on him, right? So it's time to figure out whether he can float as a long-term starting center or if that's an area they need to address next year in free agency.
I've always looked at him more as a four because I don't think he has the defensive capabilities of playing the center full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes the same with Frank Kaminsky in terms of the defensive factor, but Frank at least has the size and the ability to block shots.
Right.
Though, actually, when I'm looking at the numbers, he didn't really prove that. I must have caught a good batch of games then from Frank, because the games I caught last year, he was blocking shots, but looking at the numbers, that doesn't seem to be the case either. Well, hell, guys, I'm just realizing that Charlotte might actually have a huge problem, because outside of Roy Hibbert, who do you have as a shot blocker? And if he's limited to 15, 18 minutes a game, then you won't have that presence.
Yeah.
And that means an open door policy for opponents.
I think the perimeter defense is going to be key there. And, you know, Batum's a great defender. MKG's one of the best wing defenders in the league. Kemba, at least, you know, he's not necessarily the best. He's not like an all-star caliber defender, but he generates steals at least. He puts pressure on the ball. So I think they're going to try to keep guys corralled out on the perimeter to avoid having Zeller getting tested all that much. But that is a good point, Mort. That is a area of concern for Charlotte.
It's a psychological point, at least, because when you don't have that shot blocker, players are just more inclined to attack off the bounce.
Yeah.
It's just a thing. They look at the stat line, they just go, okay, they have no shot blockers in there right now. I'm taking to the hole, like, every day of the week. And if you get a guy in there like Russell Westbrook who gets that mentality going, like, how are you going to stop him?
Yeah, it's a very good point. Do we have anything else to hit on for Charlotte? Should we move on to the Miami Heat?
Yeah, let's get through this awful division.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Friday, September 23rd. News broke today via the Miami Herald. I believe it was Barry Jackson. The doctors found more evidence of blood clotting in Chris Bosh, which has derailed his attempted comeback.
Yeah.
Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical reported that they increasingly believe his career with the franchise is over, and that for months Bosh hasn't wanted to speak with Pat Riley. You know, at this point, it's still just speculation. We can't definitively say what's going to happen with Chris Bosh, but whereas there was some positivity coming out of his camp earlier this week in terms of him potentially returning, doesn't sound good right now. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed for Bosh and hope that he's healthy and can get this problem under control. But at this point, I don't think we can factor Bosh into our prognostication for the Heat this season. It certainly doesn't sound like he will be playing anytime soon, at least. So with that said, Bosh is not the only major subtraction for the Heat. Obviously, Dwayne Wade was their big one, as Morton can attest.
Luol Deng was their big one.
Luol Deng is with the Lakers now. They also lost Joe Johnson and Gerald Green. And then, you know, they re-signed Tyler Johnson, who Brooklyn tried to steal away from them. But aside from that, you know, their major additions are Derek Williams, Deion Waiters, James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Bino Udrih. Like, these are not marquee names, aside from maybe Deion. So,
more not. And that's not a positive thing, man.
No, it's not.
Deion Waiters being a marquee signing is that is like the definition of a bad summer. Oh my god!
Because it was not like they were knocking down his door at July 1st. It was like he couldn't find a job, and they were like, "All right, we don't have Dwayne Wade now. I guess we'll sign you."
No, they had to go through the forest to find him.
Yeah. So more. Tell me how they replaced Dwayne Wade. Who do you think starts at the two for them?
Well, Josh Richardson, I believe he actually sustained an injury a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago. I'm not quite sure how severe it is, but I look forward to seeing Josh Richardson play. I think he can become a player. He already showed that he could shoot last year, but I think he's got a game that is well-suited for the NBA. You looked at the Summer League this year. The fact that he's shooting the three ball with such confidence and aggressiveness is... It kind of took me back to the way, not the efficiency, but it took me away to the way that Steph Curry shoots the ball. Like, when he trots down court, he's got his head up and he's looking at the basket, and as soon as he sees a shot, it's up there. And Josh has some capabilities of doing that, the same thing. Like, during the Orlando Summer League, he got the ball off the backboard at one point, ran down the court, and he saw no one was really contesting him. So he just pulled up from, I think, a foot beyond the three-point line. And it was this sense that he kept taking these open J's, even though he had to dribble into them. There was no fear, there was nothing of that sort. So, and I think it's really crucial for Miami to get that sort of player in there who can be efficient, because we know that Dion Waiters has the same perspective and the same mentality, but yeah, the less said, the better, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point about his injury, looks like he suffered a partially torn MCL toward the beginning of September. The timeline is he's expected to miss about 6 to 8 weeks from that injury. So, on the best case scenario, he'll be ready for opening night. Worst case, probably early November. Yeah. So it seems like Dion Waiters might inherit the starting job by default, just because I think it seems like Tyler Johnson is going to play some backup point behind Goran Dragic. I'd be surprised if they put him at the two as a starter, just because he's going to be needed as a backup point as well. But
wouldn't you like $50 million after playing 68 career games?
I sure would. Yeah, gosh. I mean, I liked that play from the Nets. We talked about it in the Atlantic that they need to be creative in the ways they acquire talent. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, teams are so reluctant to throw out an offer sheet that I like Sean Marks kind of bucking that convention and saying, screw you, we're going to force you into these tough decisions. Like, you know, Portland is now in severe financial trouble because they have Alan Crabb tied to $75 million and CJ McCollum on a max deal and Damian Lillard on a max deal and Evan Turner at 70. And then Miami the same way. Like, you know, Miami also matched the Tyler Johnson offer. I don't think they, right?
Or yeah, yeah.
Did they match? Yeah, they matched it, right? They didn't do like a, instead of like having $12 million, his salary explodes. I guess that would be the start of 2018, 2019. Like, it jumps up to $20 million. So
yeah,
Tyler Johnson's a made man.
And he got this contract despite having not broken 1,500 career minutes.
Yeah.
Like, just let's settle that. Let's just realize how sick that is. That is so crazy.
Yeah.
He's played 1,466 career minutes, and he's a $50 million man.
God bless the new TV deal.
Yeah.
It's going to lead to a lot. I mean, just wait until next summer. You thought this one was bad.
I kind of get why NFL players were a little pissed this summer.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fact that they don't have fully guaranteed contracts and Tyler Johnson has a fully guaranteed $50 million and they're all going to have severe injuries later in life and NBA players, aside for some knee troubles, should be pretty okay. Yeah, I'd be pretty pissed too if I was an NFL player. But two-guard note, Mort, I'm with you in thinking Richardson takes over that job once he's healthy, and then Dion can be the sixth man spark off the bench.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Get excited, Heat fans. So, Sarah, I want to turn to you now because, again, you're a big man infatuation. I'm going to hope you are a little higher on Hassan Whiteside than you were Dwight Howard.
Yeah, I am. But he also elbowed Boban in the face last year, so I'm not a huge fan, but no, yeah, he's a good young player, and he is a little, every now and then, a little bit of a hothead, but I mean, you like the passion. Yeah. That's something. Yeah. I was looking though, like, as Morton had said about the Hornets, now obviously it's a little different because you can play Whiteside the bulk of the minutes, but they don't have much front court depth either. Aside from that, yeah. I mean, you got Derek Williams, and then what?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The Bosh injury puts them, or yeah. I shouldn't say injury, the Bosh health situation puts them in very dire straits.
Yeah. Amari retired, and Josh McRoberts, you really don't know where he's at. He can go down at any minute, it seems like.
Yeah.
And last year, you played Lou a lot at the four.
Right.
So, and that, the option is now off the table. You can, okay, you can say Derek Williams, maybe, I suppose.
Yeah.
Sarah's just shaking her head right now.
It's bad. There's not a lot there right now. They might,
yeah,
they
I
might
feel
have to
like
address that.
UD is still there, so he could see some spot minutes of the five. They do a Willie Reed as well. But, yeah, I mean, their depth chart is hardly inspiring, especially in the wake of Bosh, the latest news about Bosh. So, yeah. You know, it's hard to see, unless Whiteside just takes a major step forward this summer, it's hard to see them becoming a playoff team. But, you know, I am curious to see kind of how their offense changes, because I think, you know, we talked about this, I think, in the Central pod more, about how, you know, D-Wade put up big numbers. It was close to 25-5. But the Heat were better with him off the court than they were with him on the court. And I think that's because he and Dragic just play two diametrically opposed styles. You know, Wade at 34 with knee troubles is more of a slow it down, milk the clock kind of guy. Yeah. And Dragic is a run and take threes and kind of move the pace along. So I'm, you know, I'm thinking with them skewing younger now, they're going to start running a little bit more. So I think, you know, Dragic, I feel like, has not panned out in the way that the Heat expected after signing him to that big deal. But I think this could be the year where they start to see some positive returns on him.
Dragic is a guy from the school of Steve Nash and Manu Ginobili. And you kind of have to play him as such.
Mm-hmm.
When Wade was in, you're absolutely right, Brian. Things needed to be slowed down for Wade. He's just too old, too many bumps and bruises. They had to play him only 30 minutes a game to boot. So I could see the argument that unleashing Goran Dragic could reap some benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I have to ask, would you want to reap any benefits now, or do you just want to say, all right, screw it, let's rebuild?
The benefits aren't going to be that great. Yeah, it's like, I think, yeah, let Dragic do his thing. I honestly, I've always liked him. But I think, yeah, they're going to reap some benefits from that, because it wasn't really fair having him next to Dwayne all this time. But, like you said, that said, even if they do that, and I do think he will have a good year, It's not going to derail the whole starting over thing. They'll be all right. It's not like they're going to have a great year, even with him doing his thing. So they can still blow it
up. I like the fact that you're trying to calm me down, saying, you know, don't worry. They'll be bad regardless.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. They won't
be
good.
It's,
more.
Be
it's
okay.
Fine. It's going to be okay. They're going to be horrible. That's
they'll
fine.
They'll be bad. Don't worry. And I like Goran. Like I said, I like him a lot.
I was just about to say, is there a better future Manu Ginobili replacement on the Spurs than Goran Dragic as a sixth man?
Yeah, and wasn't he a pick for us? I think he was one of the ones that got away.
Oh, he was?
I'm pretty sure.
That makes sense.
I'm
that makes
sure
total sense, actually. Yeah. But just one final note on Dragic, right? Did he get 80 or 90 million? It was 90, right?
I thought it was 80, but I could be wrong. It might have been 90. You might be right.
All right, but even so, like, you know what? I'm checking because I want to be sure about this. Because in this new market, 86 million.
Okay, there you go.
So here's the thing. From the perspective of the new cap, it's a fair deal, right?
Yeah.
But this was billed on one good season in Phoenix.
Right.
One good season in 2013-14. That's it. He's not been a high impact player. Oh, well, fair impact, but not this ridiculously high impact as that in the 14 season. 1 year. That's the data that made GM say, all right, he's worth like a semi-max or whatever he got.
Yeah.
So I feel that with him having that contract, it's always playing in the back of my mind in terms of how he produces. I'm expecting him to go out and be this 18 points, 7 assists type of guy who just controls the game almost to a Steve Nash-esque level. And yet, even when he settles for like what he did last year, 14 points, 6 assists, and just doing a decent job spotting up, I was horribly disappointed. Mm-hmm. Like, really disappointed. And the whole contract element from him just... I need to get over that, but I've seen a lot of people, especially on Twitter, also just kind of rolling their eyes and going, why did we pay Dragic $86 million? And that's where the new deal comes in and kind of saves their ass.
Right.
Just a little bit. But like, even if he goes back to old Dragic, and Sarah, I know you said that even though he does, they'll still be horrid, right? But what if Miami becomes somewhat respectable? Is that even a place they want to go right now? Is it a place they should go?
I would think not, especially given the Bosch news, but I don't think they really have a choice in the matter. Signed Dragic thinking Dwayne Wade would be there for, you know, till the end of his career, and they could not have foreseen this Bosch thing becoming such an issue that it might force him to retire early. So they're kind of caught in the middle of two phases of team building. You know, they were in win now mode, and now they kind of have to dramatically overhaul within a summer. So it wouldn't totally shock me if they trade Dragic at some point, but until they get final definitive word on Bosch, they're just going to let Dragic run. You know, if anything, they'll increase his trade value, and then we can see. You know, I think a lot of it's going to come down to if a contender loses their point guard and suddenly a team is willing to give up a primo first round pick for Dragic, you know, would it surprise you if they moved him then? No, of course not. Riley's going to be opportunistic whenever he can.
You mentioned something interesting there. You said that the Heat expected him to be paired with Wade, indicating, of course, Miami had interest in keeping Wade.
Right.
Yet for two continuous seasons or summers, they lowballed the hell out of him.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's so weird.
Yeah.
And now they paid the price because he left.
Yeah. Like, well, to be fair, he would have netted more money with the Miami deal than he took at Charlotte. He just felt slighted. But, you know, I don't blame Miami for not giving him. They were offering, what, 2 years, $40 million for a, you know, he's a really good player, but, like, I think he wanted a 3-year deal. It's a lot of, you know, you're committing a lot of your franchise's future, at least your short-term future, to a guy who you can't necessarily count on. Like, last year he was great, but the few years before that, he had a lot of knee issues, and you just didn't know what you were going to get out of him in a given night. So, we'll see what happens with Miami. I think we all pretty much agree that they will be toward the bottom of this division. But let's speed through these last two teams here. We're going to go to the Orlando Magic, who... I would say it's fair to say they baffled the hell out of all of us this summer. Is that right?
Yep.
Oh, you're being so kind, Brian.
Yeah. So they brought in, you know, they traded for Serge Ibaka. Then they signed Bismack Biyombo, signed Jeff Green, brought Frank Vogel in as a coach, which we liked. You know, lost Victor Oladipo, lost Ersan Ilyasova, Scott Skiles abruptly resigned, lost some bench depth too. I think the biggest question is what the hell is this front court? Like, how in the world do they juggle minutes between all of these guys?
I don't even care right now. It's so ridiculous. Sarah, just go on a spree for me, huh? Because this Magic team is just making me frustrated. Look at what they're doing, man.
Yeah.
It is. It's like, what? You guys, I completely forgot they were the ones that ended up with Biyombo. Like,
yeah.
Because I'm thinking about Ibaka and Gordon and Vucevic. And yeah, I was just remembered that. Out of the blue. It's like, oh my god. Honestly, what are they doing? And I like so many of their pieces that it's frankly upsetting because I felt like they could have been a pretty good team. even, you know, they just give away Tobias and Oladipo's gone. And but still, there's a lot there. They're going to play Aaron Gordon at small forward. Is that what we're saying?
That's the rumor.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right, look, I'm going to rant. I'm sorry.
Go please do.
Look. So let's look at all these things. Their point guard is a guy who can't shoot, who's about the old NBA, not the new NBA, and they were so in love with him and Scott Skiles wasn't, that they essentially chose Elfrid Payton over Scott Skiles, a thing that should never, ever happen. They traded Tobias freaking Harris, 23, maybe 24 at the time, a combo forward on a good deal who can shoot, play, play defense, not particularly well, but at least participate on that end of the floor and at times be respectable. Then they trade Victor Oladipo and the rights to Domantas Sabonis, a very underrated rookie, for Serge Ibaka, who has 1 year left, and which then puts their biggest prospect in Aaron Gordon down a slot to the small forward position, which is a position he shouldn't play, and then tells Aaron Gordon, well, you have to split time with Jeff freaking Green because we just spent $15 million on him.
Yep.
Then their starting center, Nikola Vucevic, is a non-defender, so they thought, okay, let's get in Bismack Biyombo, but let's not trade Vucevic because we have to clog up the front court just because. Meanwhile, we have Evan Fournier, who has to take the reins over Victor Oladipo, which is fine, but Fournier is not a self-creator to the same extent that Victor Oladipo was, or the defender, so he's going to be doubled or even triple teamed at the times. Meanwhile, he can't even pass the ball to Elfrid Payton because he can't make a goddamn jump shot. Am I getting this right?
You also forgot that Mario Hezonja is going to be buried on the bench for the second straight year.
There's that too. Yeah. So welcome, Frank Vogel. I love your signing, but you have your work cut out for you.
Yeah, I think it's such a baffling set of moves that you have to think they have something else in the works, right? Like, you can't expect that this is their plan. This is their long term plan, and especially, I mean, look, I said it earlier, I'm a huge Georgetown homer. I love Jeff Green. He gave me a free trip to Atlanta in 2007. I will always love Jeff Green for that. But why in God's name do you trade Tobias Harris for cap relief? You know, you traded him for Jennings and Ilyasova. Ilyasova was part of the deal to get Ibaka, but you basically traded him for two expiring contracts, neither of whom are now on your team. And then you spent all of the money that was going to Tobias Harris on Jeff Green. Harris is getting $16 million a year. Jeff's getting $15 million a year. Like, he's only on a one-year deal, so I get it. It's a fine flyer. But it's just not...
No, it's not.
It's just not a position of need. Like, it's just such a weird... I don't know why you do it. Like, it only robs minutes of guys who are in your long-term plans. Like, Gordon and Hezonja, in theory... Mm. are two of your top prospects and should be like the guys that you are trying to find minutes for. But instead, I mean, Jeff Green's probably going to play 20, 25 minutes a night, which is
suicide.
You know, yeah. I mean, I just don't see how Hezonja plays unless he plays like as the backup too, but you have Jody Meeks now too. So I just don't know. We are all perplexed by Orlando. And I think, can we say anything nice about them or should we just go to the Wizards?
No, not this is not nice, but I mean, I suppose they could ask Santa for a big reset button that takes them back to prior to the Dwight trade. Yeah. I mean, and then do everything over again, like get that one shot. Right. I like Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. Terrific movie. We could actually make a movie about Orlando Magic based on Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, because I mean, they started, for what they got out of that Dwight trade, like, looking back on it, they were the only team to win any part of that trade because everyone else, all of those players left after the first year, so everyone else lost by a landslide. So I mean, and considering what happened to Dwight even since he left, you know, that was the ultimate sell high. They got a bunch of young prospects and picks, and they should be a lot further in their rebuild than they are. But right now, it just feels like they have no damn plan whatsoever. And I'll be honest, like, Sixers fans, we hold Orlando up as the example of, like, this is what you wanted Sam Hinkie to do. You wanted him to just tread water and, like, sign Ben Gordon and Channing Frye and then trade them for nothing, like, and then just be in a position where I'm giving Mo Harkless away for a top 55 protected pick that I'm never going to see. Okay, sure. Yeah, that's a great plan. Yeah. So we could have been the Magic, but instead, I mean, I guess Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid don't have a hold a candle to whatever the hell this front court is. So
I feel like there has to be a plan, though. But I can't see what it is.
Yeah, right, that's the thing. Maybe in, like, 2 years' time, we look back on this and we're like, oh, wow, they really did know what they were doing. Yeah. But I just don't see it right now.
So. The Jeff Green signing is what kind of makes that point weird, though. You know, yeah. You can say, all right, 2 years down the road, well, then signing Jeff Green to 1 year, $15 million, that shows not only a tremendous lack of creativity, mm-hmm. by the way, but if he's not a part of the future, why the hell get him on board to clock up minutes for the development of your youngsters? Look, this team should have been probably in the Eastern Conference Finals by now. They had so many weapons. They could have cashed them in like Boston wanted to or did in 2007. They could have. They could have been a playoff team right now and a playoff team that went deep. But instead, they kept selling off young pieces for, what, 40 cents on the dollar? It's tremendously stupid, and I have no idea what they're doing. And look, I mean, I crab on the Bulls all the time, but in terms of a rebuilding project, this was something that went from an A+ to like a D real quick.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't fathom right now how Orlando Magic fans are thinking or what they're going through, because their whole future, more or less, just was wasted within a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where to go from here, right? What do you do?
From what I could, the ones I follow on my timeline are still cautiously optimistic about this year, but I don't know why. So
will they be when Serge leaves them for nothing next year?
Probably not. But I said the same thing about Batum last year with Charlotte, and you know, maybe. That's the thing that's crazy. The best case scenario is that Serge resigns, and then what do you do with Aaron Gordon? Because he is, like, his natural position is the four.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, let's move on before we get angry.
But far and away, their best move of the offseason, getting Chad Forcier out of San Antonio. And I'm really, really bummed that he left. He's a great player development guy. But, I mean, maybe he can turn Aaron Gordon into a super three.
There you go. Maybe he's the next Kawhi.
Yeah.
I love the hesitation right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sure,
Brian. It's Friday.
Why not?
Yeah. Just keep dreaming, buddy.
Okay. Let's move on to the Wizards before we get any angrier.
Is that even better going off to the Wizards? This division sucks,
guys. It's terrible. It's really bad. Just wait till we do our conference predictions. It's just going to be a tire fire. So the Wizards, I think the big storyline over the offseason, I mean, they brought in Scottie Brooks. They brought in Ion Mahinmi, rounded out their bench depth, lost Nene, lost Jared Dudley. The big thing was this weird simmering tension between John Wall and Bradley Beal, where John Wall seems to really want to put himself on a tier above Beal. But then Beal just signed a deal that's worth $50 million more than Wall's, and he's really trying to be the one and 1A to Wall, and Wall's like, no, no, no. I'm Batman. You're like not even Robin. So, Morton, because I just used the Batman analogy, how do you think they coexist after this drama-filled offseason?
Not well. Probably something along the lines of the Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler thing. Mm. I could see.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's... Look, even if they somehow found a deep lost love for one another, you still have to be concerned about Bradley Beal more or less suggesting that he can't play a full game's worth of minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he himself kind of alluded to the fact that, oh, you know, I might not be able to play big minutes for the rest of my career.
Right.
And then yet despite saying these things, here you go, Bradley Beal, with a max contract. that's concerning to me. But Ryan, I have to actually ask you a question, because let's see, on August 21st, I was looking through Philadelphia and Washington, just because I was looking at their respective rosters, and a trade kind of popped up in my head. I know you are in love with Ben Simmons and all, but I'm just going to throw this at you right here. And by the way, I just need to make sure Carl Landry is no longer a Sixer. All right, so he's going to be removed from the equation.
Yeah.
Jahlil Okafor, Ben Simmons, Rashawn Holmes for John Wall and Marcin Gortat. From my perspective, it makes so much sense, and it would be one of the best defensive pairings in John Wall and Nerlens Noel. Could you imagine the defensive pick and roll on that thing?
I mean, that would be awesome. And Gortat is a beast as well. My concern.
And you keep Embiid.
Yeah.
And you keep Saric.
Yeah. My concern with that is that you still have the same problem the Sixers have now. Like, they just don't need Gortat in that deal.
Like, that was to make it more attractive, I suppose. Yeah, but yeah.
Like, there might be something that, if it was like John Wall and Otto Porter, that would be more for me to consider than Gortat. Because that would at least fill a hole. You know, I mean, you got Robert Covington, but besides that, you don't really have a lot of depth at the three, because I think Jeremy Grant's better suited for the four. I love Rashawn Holmes, by the way, so that one hurts me to go. I mean, I do think John Wall, I'm wondering how long he's in Washington.
Exactly why I asked.
Yeah, because there was that, I think it was a Michael Lee of the Vertical last year had a story, I want to say it was him, where Wall was kind of talking about, like, hey, they don't have billboards of me anywhere in this town. Like, people don't give a crap about me. And it's true. Yeah. Like, my wife is from the Washington, D.C. area. I went to school in Washington. I lived there for 8 years. No one gives a damn about the Wizards. Like, it is a Redskins city with, like, the Nationals and the Capitals are number two and three in some regard. And the Wizards, just no one cares or no one expects anything out of them, except for they're, you know, they have, I don't want to like make fun of Wizards fans, because there are some people out there who care, but the city as a whole does not rally behind the Wizards like, say, a San Antonio or an OKC or a Golden State, or even, I mean, Chicago Bulls fans have not gotten a great rap in recent years, but people care far more about the Bulls here than they do the Wizards in DC. So
I actually have a story about that, because I attended a Wizards game in Christmas 2014. Ironically against the Bulls.
I was
just
at that
happened to line up.
I was at that game too.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
The one where Tony Snell looked completely idiotic and couldn't find anyone defensively. Or that's probably not what you remember. You remember the Bulls kicking the shit off the Wizards.
Right,
though.
I do.
Right. And Pau Gasol draining that corner three at the end of the first quarter.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. That's fun. Look, small world, right? By the way, look forward to that, Sarah, the Pau Gasol three-pointer on occasion. So, as you might remember, Washington made a run, like, in the middle of the third quarter that concluded with a John Wall layup.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think a couple of rows got on their feet. That was the biggest cheer I heard that night.
Yeah.
People were just not at all into it. And when the Bulls won, it was like, all right.
Yeah.
There's like nothing there. It wasn't like boo or anything. There were no passion whatsoever. And I was there with my girlfriend and my younger brother. And they too were like, we were looking for the stadium. We had just arrived in D.C. And like, oh, and my girlfriend went, you know, we could just like follow the signs. They probably have a lot of ads for the team and going on around. And my younger brother, who was playing basketball at the time, was like, oh, man, I can't wait to watch John Wall. I can't believe we got tickets, because like Washington fans got to be crazy about him. They got to love him. We got some of the best seats. We're like 25 feet off the floor, and they weren't expensive at all, and people just didn't care at all. We didn't see any billboards, any ads. We didn't see no nothing. It was like, okay, so this there's like just basketball in this building. Yeah. All right. It was so weird. Yeah. And I've been to a lot of arenas around the States. I've never seen an arena so basketball-less.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is because DC is what they call a transplant city. So it's a lot of people from other areas. So they don't have ties to the DC area necessarily.
Yeah. Okay.
And the Wizards just haven't been, you know, they had the Gilbert Arena years, but that was really the peak of where they were. So their peak was the treadmill of mediocrity. So there just isn't a huge built-in fan base there. But I mean, yeah, I can understand Wall's frustration with that. You know, he's a, if not a top 10 player, top 15, top 20, like he is a superstar and he's now in the midst of his prime and it feels like it's about to go to waste because, you know, this roster is good, but what's their ceiling? Like the second round of the playoffs at best?
Yeah, no. At best, making the playoffs.
Yeah.
Barely.
I mean, I'm a little... I have higher hopes for Markieff Morris because I think he's going to be motivated after whatever happened to him in Phoenix last year. And, you know, he played better once he left Phoenix. And I think with a full off season, he'll, knock on wood, he should improve a little bit more. You know, Otto Porter, he's entering his fourth year. There's some rumblings that Kelly Oubre might actually push him out of the starting lineup, which will be interesting to keep an eye on. But, you know, I think we said at the very top of this segment, it all comes down to Wall and Beal. And if they can't coexist, one of them has to go. And they just gave Beal $130 million. So Wall is that guy, you know, he's not, they're not going to be openly shopping him. But he's one of those guys where, like, it would not be a total surprise if there was a blockbuster deal in the middle of the season involving John Wall.
Oh, he's in a boogie situation right now.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
If he reaches unrestricted free agency, he gone, dude.
Yeah, yeah, I would think so. I would definitely think so. All right, let's go to our rankings of the Southeast Division. And Sarah, I'm going to start with you. I don't know, this might be really hard, but it's for the terrible watchability, yeah, the watchability rankings, which team of any is actually watchable? Go 1 through 5 for us here.
You know, I really like that. We should do that. Which team, if any, is watchable instead of even ranking them?
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you're going to be league passing many of these teams this year.
This is probably the least interesting division in the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's funny is there is something that's just really interesting about the Magic to me. And it and it could be that, I mean, you guys know I have the big man bias. I still don't know how. Maybe they should just trot out all their big men in one lineup.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
The Sixers are going to do it, so they might as well.
Go for it. Why don't you just play Aaron Gordon at point guard?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, for sure.
Let's speed his development up, and he's the new Draymond Green anyway, so yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah, but it could also just be, like, you know how they had that ride at Disney World that was, like, just disasters all around you? It's like, it's like you roll into the subway, and then there's an earthquake, and then the ground opens up, and then there's fire everywhere, and then the water pipes burst, and then it floods. And it's kind of like that. Like, you could see how that could be fun. It's like, as long as you know you're probably not going to get hurt, there's something interesting about it. So, for that reason, I might pick the Magic. So, every now and then, tune in. Check out what's going on with the Magic. Other than that...
Look at the first quarter box score first.
Right.
Yeah. Other than that, honest to God, there's not a lot that I want to see. Is there anything that you guys are looking forward to in this division?
No.
Can we put a cricket chirping sound in here?
Yeah, we need a producer just for that. I am excited to see Dwight Howard and see how he fits in Atlanta. But honestly, in terms of ranking these teams, I mean, they're all, I, one of them is going to make the playoffs, and I think it's going to be the Hawks, but I don't know. I mean, the other four, all of them could make it, but I don't think there's going to be more than one playoff team out of here. So I think if someone held a gun in my head and I had to rank these teams today, I think I would do Hawks, Hornets, Wizards, Magic, Heat, dead last. What about you, Martin?
Well, they can share the fifth spot every one of them. Yeah. I'm not even going to put one above one another. Okay, Hawks won, and then tied for fifth, the remaining four. Look, this is such an indifferent division. I'm not usually one to, you know, poo-poo the league and going all snobbish and whatnot, but this division is just so weirdly put together, and it's so dramatically uninteresting that I have a hard time getting into it. I suppose the new faces is what will drive me a little bit.
Yeah.
Dwight, as you mentioned, I would also like to see Michael Kidd-Gilchrist coming back a little bit. Miami, I suppose it could be interesting to see what Josh Richardson is doing, as well as seeing if Hassan Whiteside can do more without having any real front court partner. I think he's an underrated scorer. Like, he could potentially have a 2013 year. I mean, I'm not putting that beside him. And then Orlando, I mean, I suppose I just want to watch the train wreck and then hopefully watch Aaron Gordon and Serge Ibaka make something out of this. I also like Evan Fournier.
Yeah.
But that's really about it. If Maria Hezonja is stuck to the bench for a whole year, I'm going to cry because I think he's awesome. And in terms of Washington, Washington might be one of the most unwatchable teams in the entire league. I just find their playing style so, so deplorable. I mean, it's so many long twos, so much half-court basketball. They're not running. It's just... Ugh,
and they just
get John Wall out of there.
They just hired Scottie Brooks, who is the king of long twos at OKC. So it's going to be even more excitement from the Wizards this year.
Yeah, like if one's key storyline is does Kelly Oubre push Otto Porter out of the starting lineup, then you have a goddamn problem, dude.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. Okay, so let's go through. Who do you guys think the MVP of the division is, Sarah? Let's start with you.
I really
we don't even care.
I'm using this term loosely, I should say.
I really, like, there's no name jumping at me for this. My god, Kemba?
We lost so many listeners from people from that division, like fans of that division. Yes, like five fans of five teams just hates us right now.
We praise the Hawks, so only the Magic, that's right. Magic fans deservedly hate us. That's fine.
Yeah.
But potentially Kemba, but I just worry about him because he's going to have to carry so much pressure for scoring on that team.
Yeah.
So hopefully that doesn't drag him down this year.
More, what about you?
John Wall.
Yeah. Yep. I was going to say him. Hassan Whiteside could be the dark horse, especially with Bosch and Wade gone.
John Wall.
But yeah, well, I mean, Wall was a monster last year.
Yeah, I don't think it's even close.
Yeah.
Like, John Wall to me is like, not if he won like an MVP of the division, the name MVP wouldn't be enough. He should be called the Mega Elite Superstar MVP because he's so far ahead of everyone else in this division. And that's almost why I want him traded, because then he would at least play against better competition.
You guys, to the point about the Wizards doing nobody caring, like, did you see there was that small exchange? Kirk Cousins said he wanted the Skins to be like the Spurs. And then the Spurs sent him a jersey, and he tweeted it out, and the Washington Wizards account tweeted, "We don't like that." It was so sad. I mean, of course he's not going to say, "We want to be like the Wizards," but it was sad. So, yeah.
That's perfect. What a perfect way to sum up this division. All right. So, coach of the year from the division. This is actually kind of, I mean, there are some good coaches in this division. This one's kind of tricky. Yeah. But, Sarah, I'm going to guess given your Spurs bias.
Yep.
Mr. Budenholzer gets your vote. Morton, what about you?
I'm probably a coach butt too.
Yeah.
Having said that, Frank Vogel, if he can turn what is the magic right now into actual magic, mm-hmm. then I would suppose that he should get the nod.
Yeah.
And I love Steve Clifford regardless.
Yeah. So and don't
he's my boo.
Don't rule out Spoelstra either. Yeah. If he could coax this Heat team into even 35 wins.
Yeah.
So really it's everyone but Scotty Brooks, who we just haven't seen in a while, and hell, maybe Scotty Brooks learned from his OKC days. I mean, there's not a truly bad coach in this division. You know, Scott Brooks does not have a great reputation, but he is at least a league average coach, I would say. There's no Byron Scott in this division. So that one will actually be closely contended. Do you guys have any crushes in this division? Is that even worth asking? I have one, but I'll let you guys go first.
Well, Aaron Gordon,
okay.
Obviously.
Yep.
Yeah, I could get with that. I kind of like Otto Porter.
Ah, you took mine.
Sorry.
I knew he was going to... This is Georgetown, guys. So Brian Georgetown. Is so predictable. It's unbelievable.
Well... To that point, I have a Villanova bias, so I like Daniel Ochefu, but he may just get buried. I don't know what will happen there. Brian Roberts could potentially have a good year. I've always liked him.
Backing
up Kemba, perhaps.
Yeah. That's a fun one. Yeah, I'm going all Georgetown, because this is apparently the Hoya division. We have Jeff Green, Hibbert, and Otto. We just need Greg Monroe and Hollis traded here. Although, didn't Henry Simms just sign with somewhere? The Jazz, I think. So we've got half of the current active Georgetown players. But yes, Otto Porter is mine as well. I'm not a believer that this Kelly Oubre thing is actually going to happen. I think Porter's going to keep he's not sexy. Like that's the thing. He's just like, he's not a flashy, 20 points per game scorer, but he's just so fundamentally good at everything that he does that he's just the quintessential glue guy. So I think maybe this year, now, Wall and Beal and Markieff can carry more of the scoring load, and then Otto can kind of just slide in as that fourth option on offense. I actually think Otto's going to have a big year. So I hope. I mean, that is completely super biased because we share the same school. But I'm hopeful that Otto and Roy Hibbert and Jeff Green all have a good year and break the Georgetown NCAA tournament curse in the process.
So many writers always type out, he's not the sexy pick. He doesn't play sexy. You know what? I want to see a writer just once go for it and say, you know what? That guy, he's sexy. He's a sexy beast. Come on now. It's always used as, oh, he's not sexy. When are we going to see the different tune? So, Brian, I'm giving you an assignment. Next time you see a player who's downright sexy, you go for it.
I think that's the entire Warriors team, right? I'm pretty sure. Oh, that's Steph Curry. Hitting a 33-foot three-point shot, we can define
also,
that as sexy.
Guys, I feel kind of left out. I don't have a favorite college team. Like, I should probably make it a competition between the two of you, to convince me to go for Georgetown or Villanova.
Georgetown's just a world of pain. Don't do it to yourself.
Villanova are the champions, so I think that's pretty easy.
There you go. Oh, that was an epic game. I'll give you that.
It was.
All right, guys, this has been another episode of the NBA podcast. We will continue our division previews next time with the Pacific, where we will talk about the sexy Warriors, the not-so-sexy Kings, and everything in between. Until then, Morton and Sarah, it's always good talking to you.
Likewise, Bri, and I promise we'll be a lot happier next time around.
Yes, we'll have far more fun things to talk about. All right, take it easy, guys.
You too.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.